This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. Jesus, jokes and juggling will all be up for discussion with my special guest today. And we'll be spending a bit of time in a ruined church too, with more from the Keystones archive. But let's begin with music. Very appropriate for the start of the programme. All are welcome.
Let us build a house where love can dwell, and all can safely live. A place where saints and children tell our hearts them to forgive. Lift up hopes and dreams and visions, rock of faith and bolt of grace. Give
Let us build a house where love can dwell and all can safely live. Marty Haugen's hymn, entitled All Are Welcome, aligns perfectly with the spirit and the vision of my guest today. Genesis Padgett is the current youth president of the Methodist Church, and during this year of office, they're dedicated to helping all young people to understand their value in God's eyes and their place in the life of their church. Young people involved in the life of the Methodist Church who feel called to be youth president have to present their thoughts on video and be interviewed, with the successful candidate being announced at the National Youth Gathering 3Generate, held annually in October. Genesis Padgett is the youth president until August this year and is on the island just for this weekend, and very kindly made some space in a busy programme to record this conversation. Genesis, good morning and welcome.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Genesis, I want to talk a little bit about you. You're 20 years of age. You're studying theology and mission. You are a local preacher in Barnsley, where I'm right in saying that you're living at the moment?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, for a 20-year-old, that's loads of commitment. When did you really think, I'm going to take this very seriously?
I was at a camp called Soul Survivor when I was 12 years old, and I won a free Bible, a journaling Bible, the Soul Survivor journaling Bible, and I thought, it's free, I like reading, I'll give this a read. So I started reading through it, and I read all the way through because I'm a little bit of a nerd like that. And every bad thing or meh thing that I saw 50, 100 amazing things. And after I finished, I said to my youth worker at the time, this God geezer, he's a pretty good guy. And then since then, I just thought, I have to try and live up to this standard of Jesus and just really work on myself and just be as Christ wants me to be. As Paul said, imitate me as I imitate Christ. And I just thought, actually, yeah, me at 12, I want to be like Paul. I want to be like Christ. So since then, I just started really getting involved in my church, actually starting to listen to the sermons, which, you know, although they're a little bit boring, there's always something to get out of. And I just thought, I really have to become the person that God wants me to be.
Teenage years are not easy. They're full of challenges, and I think particularly now, full of a lot of choices. So did you find that as you were exploring your faith and really trying to live up to the model of Jesus, did you find that it did help as a teenager growing up?
Yes, I did. And at school, I was quite lonely, being one of the only Christian young people in my school. None of my friends really understood what it was like to have a faith. And so I was there feeling lonely, but actually knowing in my heart that God was with me every step of the way. So no matter what happened or where I was, knowing that God is always with me just gave me the courage to just keep going. No matter what happened, just pray, read the Bible. And I just knew that God was always there just watching over me.
Did you get a lot of support at that time from your church youth leaders? Was that a good place to go to?
Yeah, just my whole church in general. Everyone there was amazing. They're my chosen family at my church, Emmanuel Methodist Church in Barnsley. And just everyone there is so welcoming. And they were so eager to have me as a young person, just there, just spouting out all my ideas, just screaming about God.
You're not afraid to say what you think, are you?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, young people are like that, and I'm just a young person. I'm not scared about hurting anyone's feelings in that sort of sense. If I believe what I'm doing is right or will really help other people, I don't beat around the bush. I say it as it is. I grew up as one of the only young people in my church, in my area, so most of my role models in life have all been much, much older than myself. And I love people just in general, but speaking to the younger people in around the connection, it's a way that I could really connect and show that I understand that they are alone.
You've just said it there. You were the only young person in your church. You don't want it to be like that, do you? You want churches to be full of young people.
And the only way that young people can kind of relate is if you relate to them first. And often in my job, I go around and almost just bully my way into spaces, to where they are, into their youth groups. And it can be a bit scary just being a random person in their safe space. So you've got to really start with that area where they can relate with you.
Now, you've got some very interesting skills that must be great icebreakers. You love a good joke, and you're very good at juggling, circus skills. Now, do you find that those are good bridges to start getting the confidence of young people?
Absolutely. I'm just showing them that I'm a normal person. I'm just a human. I'm a young person like you. I have hobbies. I like my sports. I'm a funny guy. And so when they're there and they see I am just a normal person, it can really help young people open up rather than me just being a scary random geezer just coming into their spaces.
Now, at the same time, whilst you're taking a very fresh and energetic approach to being around your peers, you're studying theology and mission. Pretty heavy stuff. So you're obviously wanting to put a strong bedrock to underpin the ministry going forward.
Yeah, so I was studying theology and mission at Cliff College last year. I paused for this year because a youth president is a full-time job, aiming to go back in September. Yeah, absolutely. Faith and my relationship with Methodism in general, it needs to be there. I can't be the youth president of the Methodist Church without that really strong faith backing up. And I hope that I often show that or omit that during all of my visits, to just show that actually I'm not scared to show who I am. And for young people, it can be hard to share their faith. And I'm just there just to show them, actually, don't be scared. It's okay. Just be yourself. Here's me being myself. And, you know, not to brag, I'm a pretty awesome guy. So
there's nothing wrong with recognising your own talents, is there? So you pitched to be the youth president, and this all comes out at the big youth conference that I know our young people from the island love going to, which is 3Generate. You're a good way through your 13 months in office. It carries on till August. But has it been and continues to be a time of travelling, talking, listening? Is that at the heart of what you do?
Absolutely. Most weekends and a lot of evenings I'm out and about at different district events or youth events or even just smaller youth groups, just to show that I'm there and to show support and to show that young people are valued and heard across the entire connection. So it's been my aim this year to visit every single district at least once, just to show that every young child, no matter where they are, is valued by myself and the church.
When you talk to young people, what's really on their mind? Do you find there's a common strand of things that bother them? What do you find that they want to talk about?
I'll often lead a conversation saying, so how do you find church? Or what do you enjoy about church? Or is there anything about your youth group that you want to improve? Or whatever. Often, a lot of young people say they feel very tokenised in the church, that they're seen as children and young people, rather than being valued individuals in their local churches. You know, like, my name's Jen, I'm not the young person in the church, I'm not the child, I am Jen and I'm your friend. And a lot of them really want to study the Bible a lot more or do wider perspectives of the Bible, in which they might not always get at their youth groups, and they're just seen as young people, and they don't want to be. They want to be the leaders of the church now.
But that's an authentic engagement, isn't it? It's not just saying, oh, we have a youth group. It's hearing what that youth group are saying.
Absolutely. And that's my job, visiting these young people, asking them all these questions, just having conversations with them, befriending them. And that's a way that they can then speak to me, so then I can then share with the wider church, this is what young people are screaming about, this is what they're asking for. How can we as a connection really help them grow?
Do you see your future in the church as a pioneering role, that you'll be wanting to make new connections, break fresh ground? Do you see that for yourself?
Absolutely. The job that I do now is a lot of that. And I just see myself doing this my whole life, and maybe not just in the UK, but travelling. I love just meeting new people, and I love helping people realise their potential. And if I can get to do that, even when I'm old and boring, as it were, then I would absolutely love whatever I do in life.
Jen, I don't think you'll ever be old or boring at all. Now, you identify using the pronoun they or them. Can I ask you why?
Yeah, you can. It's not something that I often publicly share, because it's just me. That's just who I am. But I don't really identify as a male or a female. I identify as Jen, and I'm just me. So using the pronouns they, them just fits who I am, just being me, rather so than a man or a woman.
And do you find that that's another thing that's helpful, perhaps to young people who are wondering how they see themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. For a lot of young people, it is that kind of icebreaker there. And for a lot of lonely young people who are struggling with that self-identity, it is just something really great that we can talk about and have that common aspect over, where I can really encourage them and say, that is who you are. Whoever you feel to be, God loves you. And for a lot of them, just hearing that is just a big relief, that they're so worried about their faith and their families that often they forget that God loves them. No matter who they are, God will always love them.
And that is so important in a world that is driven by image. And no matter how we try to get away from it, image, social media buys into this in a very negative way, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think just showing who I am, not just with pronouns, but just me being me in every aspect of life, not hiding from who I am on social media or anywhere I go, is really almost against the system that we seem to have built up around ourselves, that actually you don't have to act perfect, or you don't have to look perfect. Just being yourself is perfect enough for God.
Let this house proclaim from floor to floor.
Thank you, Jen Padgett, the current youth president of the Methodist Church, on a flying visit to the island this weekend. And if you can get to Colby Methodist Church this morning by 10:30, you can meet Jen, because they'll be preaching there at an all-age communion service, and Jen would love to meet as many people as possible of all ages whilst they're here. Keystones was a series first broadcast here on Manx Radio in the 1980s as part of our regular Sunday religious programming. The presenter was the Reverend David Bush, a former vicar of Maroun, who travelled round the island's churches, discovering all he could about their history and their place in the community, usually in conversation with the vicar or minister, or, as is the case today, in conversation with a local landowner. In this archive recording, we're discovering some of the facts and the legends surrounding St Trinian's Church, now a ruin on the road between Douglas and Peel, as Reverend David Bush chats with Dr McPherson.
The road is quite straight here as you leave Crosby, going to St John's, but it wasn't always so. With me here this morning is Dr McPherson. He's owner of the farm here. Tell me, Dr Mac, what happened to the road here?
Well, when one approaches St Trinian's from Douglas, many of us will recall alterations which took place on the main road 25 years ago. We can remind ourselves of the winding road by observing the hedges. Just below the entrance to Crag Beg, the road curved to the right, and beyond the junction with the Collegial Road, the road curved to the left. A section of that road was preserved to act as a parking place for cars bringing people to visit St Trinian's. Rhododendrons fill in the concavities of both curves. The road not only curved, but it undulated. And where the stream passes under the road near the Highlander Inn was a humpback bridge where racing motorcyclists became airborne. When the wall at the bottom of the glebe was replaced following the road straightening, the Highway Board readily agreed to build a wicket gate to give pedestrian access to the field. They also agreed to keep cement away from the front of the wall. It would not have looked appropriate so close to an ancient monument.
I suppose before that gate, the people had to climb over the fence or over the wall to get in there to look at it, did they?
Or they opened the field gate with the danger of letting the cattle out.
Ah, yes. But I often wonder now, who was this St Trinian, or St Ninian? I think that was his original name, and it came to be known as St Trinian at different times. He was born in Scotland, wasn't he?
Yes, in Galloway. He was born about 360 AD, and his father had been christened, so he was a son of the church all through his life. And he went to Rome to be educated, and later he came back to take up residence in South Scotland again.
Yes, and he was the source of much inspiration to many people in believing in the Christian faith.
That's right.
Well, let's go and have a look inside the church here.
I have the key here. Here we are. We can go inside.
This church, of course, was built on the site of an earlier keel, and it goes back to the 6th century, or even before that. This is evident by some of the crosses which have been discovered on the site. And also, the age of the building is indicated by the very great thickness, up to 4 feet in some places, of the stone walls. It was back in the 1200 that King Olaf granted a charter to the Abbey of St Ninian at Whithorn for a hospital at Balagriba, and this came within the parish of Maroun. The church was built and provided on condition that the monks said prayers for the souls of Olaf's father and mother and his various members of the family.
How many people would this building hold?
Well, Dr. Mack, it's very difficult to tell exactly how many, because a lot would depend on whether they're actually seating on benches or standing up. In the old days, of course, there were no such things as pews and benches in churches. They usually had a bench round the end of the wall, round the edge, where people who weren't so fit, weren't so able to stand up during a service, could go and sit there, and that was the origin of the term backs to the wall. I should think that if they had pews and benches at some time. They could have got well over 100 people here, which may relate to the size of the parish itself. The church in size is very roughly the same as many of our ancient churches here, with a proportion of 3 times the length to the width. But here it's unusual that you've got a division between the chancel and the nave, where there's a very strong indication of a wall or a rood screen there which separated them. So the parishioners presumably were kept to the back part of the church, the 2/3 of it.
Yes. Now, when we come to this end of the church, this is an interesting feature, the leper window. Leprosy was the scourge of Europe for about 400 years, from about 1000 to 1400. And as you have said, this present building was erected during that period. Leprosy was known to the ancient Hebrews, Greeks, and Romans, and was mentioned in the Bible. Everyone knew that contact with a sufferer was a potential source of infection, and lepers were not allowed to join congregations such as would assemble in this church. In most places, they wandered about as outcasts, but leper houses were provided in some areas. There were 220 leper houses for their isolation and care in England and Scotland, but I know of no record of a leper hospice in this island.
But of course, this was a hospital. I suppose it was a hospice, really. It was a guest house, wasn't it, for travellers, for the beggar folk who were coming along and had nowhere to lay their heads.
Yes, and any treatment, of course, would be through the monks who grew herbs, etc.
Well, as we're standing here, you can probably hear the distant traffic going by on the road, which is partly due to the fact that the building has got no roof at the moment. It's believed that the original roof, which of course would have been thatch, was taken off in the time of the dissolution of the monasteries. And although attempts have been made to re-roof this in the past, it's never actually been achieved. Everybody knows the story of the Buggane, which is a little bit of a myth and a fairy story. I don't think there's any truth in it. But there was an attempt in the 17th century to re-roof the church, and timber was sent over from the mainland to provide the rafters and so on, but the ship foundered, and all the cargo was lost, and nothing was achieved. The other reason, of course, for the noise coming through here is the large number of openings in the church. The walls have a variety of openings, wide, narrow, the one that Dr. Mack was talking about, the leper window, which was only about 10 inches square, and there are a lot of other openings along the north wall, which have been built up during the early part of this century by the ancient monument people on the island, and a very good job they did of the restoration work. Of course, there are a lot of stories attached to the church. This very often happens with a ruined building. One of them was at the beginning of the century, there was an old fiddler who lived in the parish, and he was very anxious to obtain some timber to provide a new fiddle for himself. And he went up to the church, and he was asked by one of the neighbours around here why he wanted to have a bit of the church timber. "Oh, man," he said, "they've been singing psalms and hymns there for hundreds of years, and the wood must have got some of the music into it. I want to get it out." There are other stories about people who used some of the stone for building pigsties in the local farms, and all the pigs died. And when Archibald Clark was vicar here at the beginning of the century, one of his church wardens and a local farmer, Mr. Corlett, says that when the spire was being built at the Tower of Braddon New Church, the contractor thought it would be a nice idea to include in it some of the stones from St. Trinian's ruin. So he took some of the well-carved stones, some of the granite, some of the sandstone, and built them into Braddon Spire. Well, of course, we all know that Braddon Spire was blown down twice. Whether there's any connection between the two, I leave to you to guess. So now, just before we leave this charming old ruin here on the main road, let's have a final word from you, Dr. Mack.
Manigan, Trinian, Banny me. Monks of St. Trinian, bless me.
Reverend David Bush in conversation with Dr. McPherson in the ruins of St. Trinian's Church in Moraun, first broadcast here on Manx Radio in the 1980s. And there'll be more from the Keystones archive in the future. But now let's take our usual look at the notice board. And a quick reminder that Praying the Keels Week started yesterday, and there's a full programme of daytime and some evening events between now and next Saturday. Look out for the distinctive green leaflets in all the churches and other public buildings, or take a look at the website for the full programme, prayingthekeels.org, and Keels has two E's and two L's, K-E-E-I-L-L-S. Port Erin Gospel Church have their regular Sunday services today at 11:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. when the speaker will be Mr. Timothy Monteith, who's visiting from Belfast, and all are welcome. This afternoon, Bigarrow Chapel on the main road just outside Kirkmichael have a pet blessing service this afternoon at 2:30. All well-behaved creatures, great and small, and their owners are welcome, and the service will be led by Reverend Brian Yardie. This evening at 6:30, the Mariners will be in the Howe Chapel, when the preacher will be Canon Malcolm Convery. The service will, as always, be followed by supper and community hymn singing, and all are welcome. Also this evening, the Talis Consort will be in concert in Castletown Methodist Church, starting at 7:30. This is an evening of music of the cosmos, how space has inspired composers over the centuries. Admission is free. On to the week ahead now, and Sandygate Chapel have another of their very popular fundraising mornings this Tuesday, the 19th. The chapel will be open from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, serving tea, coffee and cakes. There's no charge, but your donations will be most welcome, and Tuesday in Sandygate will benefit the Isle of Man Anti-Cancer Association, who'll actually be making a presentation about the work of the charity at 11:20, before the raffle is drawn at around 11:45. On Wednesday, May the 20th at 7:30, there'll be another Summer Songs of Praise in St. Adamnan's, Lonnon Old Church. It'll be led by Father Michael Brighton, with soloist Mandy Griffin, and Wendy McDowell will be the organist. Also this Wednesday evening, it's this year's Post Guild concert held in St. John's Methodist Church Hall, starting at 7:30. Admission is £10 for a night packed with winning performances from this year's Manx Music Festival and a delicious country supper. Come early to be sure of a seat and pay at the door. Ballykilferrick Chapel have another Skeet and Sketch evening this Thursday the 21st. Not in the chapel, but at Keller's in Port St Mary. It's from 7 p.m. until 9 on Thursday evening. All materials will be supplied and donations will be welcomed towards the Ballykilferrick Chapel Restoration Fund. And we finish with a couple of dates for next weekend. Union Mills Chapel have a local market this coming Saturday the 23rd, open from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and there'll be refreshments on sale too. Also on Saturday the 23rd, Bride Methodist Chapel are hosting a concert by Glenfaber Chorale. It starts at 7:30 and it'll be followed by light refreshments. And that's all that we have time for now. But I'll be back tonight at 9 o'clock with Sundown, and I'd love you to come and join me in our virtual lounge for our usual mix of your requests and dedications and the very best easy listening music. But for now, this is Judith saying thank you for listening and wishing you and all those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning.
Station, Manx Radio.